Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, the Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to welcome our next guest, Al Jones. Al is a vice president of sales who has made his career on building and developing successful sales teams, driving new strategies, and forging relationships that run much deeper than business. And today, I'm really excited to share his insights and stories on how he applies his principles, not just to how he runs his own team and his client relationships, but most importantly, to his family as well. So we're going to talk about things like, how do we leverage our curiosity and expectations to raise the bar? What does it mean to leverage the power of being a great human being? How do we find success when we hear the word no? And what does Al mean when he says that he believes leaders know, show, and go the way? This is a great conversation. I'm really excited to share it with you all today. Thank you for being here. And Al, thank you for taking the time to share so much with us. Of course, before we get started, we do need to take a moment to thank our sponsors. So first, we have HumanTel. For everybody who is interested in learning how to accurately evaluate what people are thinking and feeling based on their changing facial expressions and emotions in real time, please head over to HumanTel.com and check out their catalog of online training. And when you do, when you find the training that's right for you, please enter the code INQUASIVE25 for 25% off of all of their online training. It is best in class. I've done it myself. I highly recommend it. That's over at HumanTel.com. For the professional interviewers, please head over to the International Association of Interviewers at certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you can learn more about the community that's over there to help interviewers find support from each other, additional resources, legal updates, interview techniques, online and in-person training opportunities. And that is also where you'll learn whether you or your team qualify for the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation and what that designation can mean for you or your team and your careers moving forward. All of that and more at certifiedinterviewer.com. And of course, please head over to inquasive.com. Inquasive.com is where you can learn all about the programs that we are asked to provide our clients when they ask us to work with their leadership teams, sales teams, or HR teams, and teach them the techniques necessary to obtain the everyday confessions in all of their conversations. You can see all of those programs and more at inquasive.com. We thank you all for taking the time to join us today. Thank you very much. And now without further ado, Al Jones. Good morning, Al. It is always great to see you. And I'm very happy you're taking the time to join us today. How are you?
Excellent, man. Excellent.
Hopefully life as well. It's a rainy day here in the Carolinas. Hopefully you're staying warm and dry.
I'm staying dry, that's for sure.
And I know that you've got your grandkids with you today, so I want to be very respectful of your time and get you back to the important things of playing with them as soon as we can. So to get this conversation rolling, having worked together in the past and seen you develop successful sales teams at multiple organizations throughout your career, the first question I'd love to ask you is, from a leadership perspective, what does it take to develop and maintain successful sales teams?
I can answer that question with one word, consistency. I think that through my career, I've been very, very consistent in a leadership role with the message that I deliver to my, to the sales teams and, to the managers. I've been, the expectations have never changed. You know, I don't really adjust expectations. I sort of stay exactly where I have a bar that I believe that we all have the potential to hit. Nothing that I haven't done myself. And then be consistent with the message. You know, there's a saying I like to use. Well, it's not my saying, but leaders know the way, go the way, show the way. And I think I've done a decent job of doing that. I don't ask anybody to do anything I haven't done. And I've been pretty consistent at doing that. And I think that most of the people, if you go back and talk to salespeople or managers I worked with in the past, I don't think anybody would tell you that that I don't deliver a consistent message. You know, you can almost tell time about what I'm going to say. You ask me a question, I'm going to pretty much say this. you know, and it's been timeless. So I think some of the stuff, I've had to adjust some, you know, during the millennial period, and, you know, we had the different motivating factors and so on. But for the most part, it's been consistency.
And that's extra important, especially in sales. And you mentioned motivation, which we'll circle back to in a minute, but sales is a roller coaster ride.
Yep.
There's times when we're just flying and having fun and enjoying it. There's times where we're grinding and we're feeling like it's just not going to work. Everything's against us. What are we going to do? So the consistency across that roller coaster becomes very important. So people have the anchors, they have those expectations, they know where their support is going to be. All of these things become very important, especially throughout that roller coaster ride, which isn't unique just to sales, but is certainly separates sales on a consistent basis from a lot of other roles. You mentioned that motivation piece. And yes, whether it is different generations or different people in general, different times in the sales cycle. I mean, we could get into the differences for an hour alone just there. But what are some of the more successful techniques you have used to connect and motivate with people or provide people with the motivation that they need?
Okay, so that's a great question. And I'm going to do my best to answer it in two parts. One is connect with them on what's important to them. Okay. And because nothing motivates somebody more than what their own personal needs or wants are, right? That's one. But I think over the years, one of the things I learned a few years ago was, I guess when I say I learned, I heard it out loud, was you can't motivate people. It is impossible to motivate a person. You can, because they have to motivate themselves. You know, if a person doesn't perform based on something you said, but what you say has to get them to be motivated or for them to motivate themselves to do what's hard, right? So I think that, you know, if sticking within, you know, my personal core values, which has been faith, family, work. I started my career in sales, you know, with that in mind. Well, I started my career in leadership with that in mind. And sticking with that, I always look at, you know, that's how you connect with other people. I think that connecting with them, finding out what's important to them, finding out what their personal values are, and then helping them build a strategy that they believe will work. But not leaving the model that you know that it takes to be successful in that particular industry, right? So in our industry that I've been in for the last 20, almost 30 years now, as you know, everything is about activity and growing pipelines. So you can work within, you know, faith and family and try and keep all that together and let them know that it matters, you know. But you can't get away. You can't let it deter you away from the activity and the pipeline growth that you have to have, right? Because if it does, then this, you have to realize early on that this might not be the particular industry for them. Not saying they can't be salespeople, but depending on the industry, that if they can't motivate themselves to drive for those levels of activity and to generate the pipeline growth that you're looking for, then it just may not be the industry for them. You know, so, but I think the answer to the question is connecting with them on what's important to them.
For sure. And you mentioned so much there that's worth going back and unpacking and getting deeper into. And I'll totally confess, for me, finding intrinsic motivation can be hard to do consistently. Right. I need extrinsic motivation. I wish I could be one of these like motivational guys that talks about how I get up every day waiting to kill the day. And I'm all self-motivated. I'm not. There's right. times where I find it, but there's lots of times where I struggle to. So whether you mentioned family, whether it is Brooke inspiring me, whether it's looking at my son in the morning and being like, I got to do it for this guy, or whether it's conversations I've had with other people that make me realize I've got to level up or I've got to push through today. And then finding even small wins, and this might be the most random example ever, but last year, fall, maybe late summer, fall, I don't know anymore. I was going through a particular time where I felt like I was just having trouble motivating myself and doing the right things and whatever. So I was here in my office, and because I didn't get up on time that morning, I didn't make myself lunch. So I had to go get lunch. So that's like the other nail in that. I'm not feeling good about myself. And I have right. to go spend money because I didn't do what I was supposed to do this morning. Right. Like that 10 minutes of sleep now costs me the time and money of going to get lunch. So when I went to get lunch, little restaurant down the street that I go to all the time, instead of ordering a Coke Zero, I ordered water. For no other reason than I should do something positive for myself today to try to kick this start back in the right direction. So if I just don't drink a soda today and I drink water, at least I can look myself in the mirror and say I made one good decision. And let's be honest, it was a hard decision to make.
Right.
I guess. Haven't had a soda since.
Oh, you know, you're right. Except we go out, you're drinking water.
And it's like, I'm not on some crusade against soda. Like, if push comes to shove and I need a Coke Zero, I'm going to drink a Coke Zero.
Right.
But it was once that momentum started, like, well, I didn't have a soda yesterday, so I can't have one today. Well, I didn't have it last week, so it can't be today. And sometimes I'll be out to lunch and I feel like I just need something with flavor, that little kick. And I'm like, well, it's been so long. I don't want to break the trend today. And like, for no other reason. So when we talk about, especially in sales, activity and pipeline, we don't want to do something for the sake of doing it, because many times that can defeat the purpose. But if we understand that the activity itself is a win within itself and sets us up for future success, now we can start, like you said, connecting with people on the on their level to start building that progress and getting that momentum going. So it's not just, well, I haven't had that big win yet that a couple of my teammates had this month. Well, you're right. However, if we continue down this path and we continue doing these things and we make a couple small tweaks, that win is in here. It's just a matter of getting it out and not quitting.
Well, I tell you what, let's slide back a little bit into to the first part of that piece. So one of the challenges that we're trying to find what motivates, you know, what's personal to them or what motivates them, is, you know, more times than not, you run into what I call the Michael Jordan effect, right? It's everybody wants to be like Mike, but nobody wants to do what Mike did to become Mike.
Sure.
Right. So nobody wants to go here. Nobody wants to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go out and shoot 1,000 free throws, right? No one wants to get up in the morning in sales and get out in the field and do, you know, 50 cold calls or get on the phone and make 150 phone calls. It's so easy for people to say, you know, I'll do whatever it takes. You know, I'll do this and I'll do that. But it's a whole different game when it comes down to actually doing it, right? And it's just a... And I think that's one of the biggest challenges for us in sales leadership is finding the people that will actually, that say they want it, are willing to do what it takes to get it, and will actually go out and execute on that plan to get it done, right? It's just, it's a challenge. And over the last, 10, 12 years, it's become even a bigger challenge, you know, with the younger folks that we've been, you know, seeing coming through the system and going through the age of entitlement, trying to get people motivated to go out and do this. Do they think they can snap their finger and there's going to be immediate gratification behind it? And it's not. I mean, it's a process, you know, in any sales industry that you're in, whether you're selling, you know, technology or clothing or car parts, it doesn't matter. There's a sales process. And if you look at the veterans that have been doing this successfully for a year, their process that they did 20 years ago isn't much different than the process today. The only difference is, you know, especially with technology, technology where it is, COVID in 2020 has changed some things, has changed the game a little bit. You know, not as many people, you know, it's a little harder to get to them in person now, so you got to get a little bit more creative and, you know, that type of stuff. Email used to be great now, you know, because of cybersecurity. You know, and even, you know, have your emails, if you email too much, is going into phishing or, you know, junk mail and so on. So, but nonetheless, you still got to be able to manage yourself to the numbers and get up and get going. Sort of like when you said about the older statement. I think her name is Mel Robbins, wrote a book called The 5 Second Rule. And in there, she talks about this one particular time where she had she was notorious for hitting the sleep button, the snooze button, like 7 or 8 times every morning, right? And so one morning she did it, and she did it about 6 or 7 times, and then she, you know, she got up. Now instead of her being on time, now she's rushing, you know, and now she gets her kids off to schools, and she realized that because she hit that button, you know, 6, 7, 8 times, and made them late, now she's rushing her kids. Now her husband is rushing and they're all rushing and she's sending her kids off, you know, and a heck, starting kids off day real hectic. They get to school. Now they're mentally, they're not prepared. And then they have a bad day and that cycles down to her getting a phone call at work. Now she's having a bad day and all this stuff happened. And she boiled it down to, you know, it's, she started the trend because she got up, hit the snooze button 7 times. So she developed a strategy of just anything she, anytime she has to do anything, she does it within 5 seconds. You know, so when the alarm goes off in the morning, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, boom, I'm up, right? And so I read that book and I could think of so many different things because we are all natural procrastinators, right? It's in us to do. It's in our DNA. All of us have the ability to procrastinate. And face it, nobody wants to get up and do what's hard. I mean, I can't wait to get up tomorrow morning and go do something that's going to be painful. No, we don't do that. But if you adapt that type of strategy where everything you do, and I try to do that now, I try not to put off anything. But if I think of it, I try to execute on it right away. So getting up, you know, I got to get up and I got to make my first phone call. You know, I get up and make the first phone calls. You know, I try to do the hard things first every day. You know, whatever's hard, I eat. Mark Twain, eat the frog, right? Yeah. Get up, eat the frog every morning. And just trying to be productive. But yeah, it's finding people that can relate to this type of conversation and personally execute on it is always been a challenge. I don't see it ever not being a challenge. But it's something that as you find the people, as you can get them to work through that, if you get them to work through that piece, be honest with themselves, look in the mirror, and understand where their weaknesses are and then work towards developing that. And then you as a leader can help them do that. I think, you know, that's how you grow, bringing this all the way back around. I think that's how you can start growing successful sales teams and organizations just by getting people to start seeing themselves, seeing their weaknesses honestly, and then working together and having a manager or a leader working with them that they believe actually cares about it and driving to that, you know, helping them drive every day to be the best they can be every day.
Very nice. And I say this jokingly, contest your point about we're all natural procrastinators a little bit, because I think I'm a professional procrastinator. I don't think it's natural for me. I think I've elevated the art. So it's like to be clear about that. If I'm ever a suspect in a homicide case and they need my fingerprint, the snooze button might be the safest place for them to go to get like the single best copy of my fingerprint. So right. I appreciate you sharing that 5 second rule. And I went through a time where I would leave my phone. I use the alarm on my phone now, but like in the bathroom. So I would actually have to get up to go shut it off. So that way right. I was out of bed, but I've gotten out of that habit. So maybe you've motivated me to go back to that habit. We'll see. Talk to me in 2 weeks. Hold me accountable. See if I we'll actually get that enough.
I'm telling you, if you think about it, it makes sense. I mean, if the alarm goes off or anything else you think about, you just say, okay, it's almost like an internal competition. Because you say, okay, I'm getting 5 seconds. You are consciously saying 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If I don't get up, I won. That's my first win of the day. Right. If I don't get up, that's my first loss of the day. Think about it like that.
No, that's a great way to look at it. And you're right. Using the analogy from her book, if I don't get up when I'm supposed to, I'm playing from behind. It doesn't mean I can't win. It doesn't mean I can't get it back. But I'm playing from behind. Right out of the gate, I'm playing from behind. So that's a good way to look at it.
Well, not to mention the physiology that goes behind that. Okay. So, yes, you can catch up. But think about what you put through your body through the emotional stress that you created by being behind.
Yeah.
You know, subconsciously, I mean, your heart rate's different, right? Your nerves are different, thought process is different. All these things are happening. Now you don't realize it because you're in the chase now to catch up for that 20 minutes that you lost. But nonetheless, it's there, right? And that they call it the hidden stress. It's there. All because you didn't get up, you hit the snooze button.
Well, thank you for making me feel more guilty about myself, but doing so in an educative and supportive way. I appreciate that. Let's take those thoughts. We're talking about the hidden stress. talk about the thought process, talk about the heart racing, what we're focusing on. Are we focusing on what we're supposed to be doing, or are we focusing on falling behind? Let's bring that back to developing people, whether it's across generations, somebody who's new, maybe even somebody who's been around for a while and done pretty good, but they hit the inevitable funk that we all find ourselves working through at some point in our career. Earlier, I heard you say the quotes, you know, we know where to go. We show them how to get there. I'm sure I screwed that up. I wrote it down.
No, know the way, know the way, go the way, show the way.
Yes. So let's talk about showing the way. When you see people from a sales perspective that are playing from behind, that have kind of fallen into some of these psychological traps, what are some of the techniques that you use to help show them the way out of it so they can begin to achieve the success they're capable of?
Okay, this is going to sound a little strange, but I when I'm working with them one-on-one, I just try to bring them into my life, into my circle. Because I think that, you know, again, leading by example, if I can bring them in and let them see how I work and see exactly how I do the opposite of what they do and what the results I get from it. Right. So if it's a matter of, you know, how do you start your day planning? You know, they get a chance to see how I plan out my days. I'll share my calendar list with them, my to-do list. You know, how I'm always working ahead, never from behind. You know, I was laughing the other day. I have a board in my office here that has three columns. I have projects to do, and then my other column is travel. But my travel board is done like 30 to 45 days in advance. So I already know where I'm going. So then I build everything else around that. So I sort of try and work with the rest of the same thing. Build your plan out. Plan things out. And it's not anything I'm doing, really. It's like, again, it's old school stuff. Calendarize everything that you do, right? If you talk to someone and you want to, you know, you got an appointment, you want to schedule something, put it on the calendar right now. If they say, well, you know, it's going to be 6 months from now. Great, let's put it on the board, on the calendar 6 months out, right? So if you're always planning ahead and doing that, you know, that's what I share with them. You know, I'll try and share the fact that, you know, here's how I do. Here's my calendar. Here's what I do. You know, I bring in people that give them, you know, testimonies that they've seen, you know, seen that I've done things that they're put into practice, you know, and how it worked for them. I think that's pretty much, that's the answer for the most part is literally I bring them into my life and I'll show them as an example. And then outside of what I'm seeing it, seeing what I do, then I'll get out and do it with them, you know, and then they can see it work. You know, there's so many managers out here. You know, I've got reps all over the country with Doug, and I interview and talk to reps all over the country all the time. And there are so many managers out here that do the, that coach from the tower, right? They're telling everybody what to do and how they're supposed to do it. But the reps never see them do it themselves. You know, and I think that's, you know, one of the things we do is, you know, we do like manager calls, right? So all the managers on Monday, they call their customers for their rep. And they do it on Teams because all our guys are remote so that they can see the reps and see them make the phone calls. You know, and we try to do it vice versa. I think that when you do that, reps see it work versus when you have reps and you got that manager in the ivory tower that's, go out and do it this way. This is what you're supposed to say. And, you know, after a while, the reps just look at them and go, okay, well, I've never seen him do it that way. I can't believe, he does it like that. Why am I going to do that? It's, just, it's harder to sell. So you got to be willing to lead by example. I think you have to be willing to lead by example everything you do, starting at home as dads. You know, I think that as dads, as husbands, you know, we have to be, you know, kids aren't blind. You know, they watch what you do. I've got grown kids. My kids are all, you know, adults. And some of the conversations I've had with them about childhood and stuff, there's stuff they noticed, blew me away. You know, it's like, man, you guys saw that, good and bad. You know, so kids don't miss it. Your spouses don't miss it. your reps sure don't miss it. You know, your ego may let you think that they don't see it, but if you're sitting in that office all day, they're out there pounding the streets, and you're not out there with them, you're not willing to run through speeds and get in front of customers and prospects and take that butt kicking that they're taking every day out in the field, you know, they notice the difference in there. So you got to get up and lead by example.
That is so important. And we'll start with that. There were a couple of things that you said there. And I know leadership is something, you talk about your values and things that you believe in, your family, your work, and beyond. Leadership is such a big part of that. But the leading by example and getting the hell out of the tower is so important for so many reasons that you talked about. I feel like with leaders, but across verticals, but certainly in sales, leaders don't necessarily like to get into the field for lots of reasons. Maybe one, they just say, I don't have the time for it. I'm busy. I've got other stuff to do, which is a lie because we all have time for what we believe is important enough. So really what we're saying is we don't think it's important enough. That's a conversation for the side. So whether they feel like it's a time thing, maybe some of them feel like, well, I've already paid my dues. So part of being promoted means I don't have to do that anymore, which again is another falsehood. It's actually more important that we do it now and continue to hone our skills. And I feel like potentially another reason why they don't do it is, there's more, of course, but one of the other big ones is that fear of failure. Well, what if I tell them that this is how I was successful and this is how you're supposed to do it and watch, I'll go land this deal and then it doesn't work. Like, am I going to lose credibility? Are they going to lose faith in me? Are they not going to believe what I say? When in reality, it could not work because of obstacles that were entirely out of our control. We did everything we normally do and we don't win 100% of deals. Sometimes they fall through because we messed up. Sometimes they fall through because nothing we were going to do was ever going to win that deal. And we can even become more credible by working through that adversity with our team and showing them how to get through that. So I'm just curious how you use all of that as you get out there side by side, hip to hip with your team in the field.
So what you just said at the end of that was, to me, that was the most important thing out of everything you said. It's not... When a manager is out with a rep, it's really the most important thing that they'll see is not what you do that works. It's how you respond when it doesn't. It's how do you respond to failure? You know, how do you respond to adversity? That's where they learn the most. That's when they pick up and they realize that, okay, it's not just me. That's when they understand that even though you're a manager or a vice president or whatever, and you go out here and you try, you make calls and you get all hung up on it. They want to see you pick up the phone and make another call. They want to see you go knock on another door, even though you just got blasted, you know, at the door before you. They want to see you, you know, when you're handling objections and, you know, you get no, 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 no. You know, how do you respond? You know, and what do you do next? Because that's what their day is like. You know, you're out here for one day doing it with them or a half a day or a couple hours, whatever. You know, they're out here doing it 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, right? So they want to see how you respond so they can have a better idea and say, okay, it's not just me. Now, one of the biggest problems you have in sales or biggest challenges is salespeople take rejection personal. Even though we tell them it's not personal, they still come in and they take rejection personal. You know, when we hire reps, we always tell them, we're in the no business. We're not the yes business. We're in the no business. Your job is to get through as many no's as it takes and you can find the yes. And through development over the course of 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, we'll work on your skills to get that ratio now. So you may walk in the door at 50-1, but our goal within 6 months is to get that number down to a manageable number, maybe 20-1 or 15-1, you know, because you've gotten better at positioning and trial closing and initial benefit statements, value props and so on, and identifying quickly what's a real opportunity, what's not a real opportunity. Seeing how you respond to failure is the best. I've got one of my managers that's in the Southeast. One of his favorite things when he goes out, I call him a road warrior. He's out of field defense all the time. He loves it when, you know, he'll call me and say, man, I love that. I was out with him. And man, we got a dog, you know, we got the door slammed on us, whatever. And then I saw the rep look at me, sort of, side-eyed, like, oh, crap. And then we went right to the next door, and then he just got a chance to see that, hey, yeah, it happens to everybody. This is what we do. We're in a no business, ideally, don't take it personal. No, not right now. No, I had a bad day. No, my boss just pissed me off. No, I'm mad at my husband this morning. No, my kids woke up this morning screaming. I don't feel like talking to you. It's no for a lot of reasons. It's never no because I don't like you. They don't even know you. Right? So it's getting out there with them in the field, letting reps see that and being real time with them versus guy. Iron Towers, I think that's the quickest way that you can build a successful sales team and minimize, part of building a successful sales team is minimizing turnover, right? So if you don't minimize turnover, if you're doing churn and burn, you're never going to have an exceptional team because no one's been there long enough, for customers to feel comfortable with doing business with them. Customers, I've seen customers where they say, oh, you're my new ref. All right, come back and see me in a year. You're still here in a year, I'll buy from you. And if reps said that to every, if customers said that to every rep that walked in there, that walked in the office, especially in our industry, man, we wouldn't sell too much anything. There's so many reps, because of the challenge and the level of rejections, leave so quickly. And I'm sure it's not just my industry, but in most industries, when you're out B2B, doing B2B sales, you're intruding on their space and their time. Versus inside sales where they're coming in, they're coming to you. So.
All great points. And I love a pretty good idea who I think you're talking about in that scenario, but I don't want to name names and be wrong.
Right. I'm sure you're right.
And I would agree with your evaluation or your thoughts on that individual. But I'm also curious, because one of the unique things that I've seen within some folks within the sales industry, and particularly working with you currently and in the past, is the ability to celebrate rejection. I mean, I'm not getting out of bed going, this is going to be a really successful day if everybody I talk to rejects me. It's somewhere I got to win business in here. But there are so much that we can learn from rejection. And the more we get rejected, the more we can start figuring out, what does that no really mean? Is there another time, another way, another avenue, another opportunity? Maybe not. Maybe I screwed this one up completely, but how did I learn from screwing this one up so I'd never screw another one up the same way? I got to invent a new way to screw another one up in the beginning. So even seeing guys and girls who develop the ability to celebrate rejection and turn it into a positive, to become more successful, because I think it's natural as human beings for us to take rejection personally, but kind of like overcoming that personal feeling and using it to leverage the future success is what becomes important.
So I was going to tell you one of my favorite stories to tell is when I talk about knowing your numbers. Remember I said about, you start at 50-1, you get down to 20. One of the ideals, one of the strategies there is that I'm a firm believer in is every rep should know what their number is, right? We have different numbers in our industry. How many cold calls to an appointment? How many appointments to a proposal? How many proposals to a close, right? Just keeping it simple. So if you know your numbers, what your ratios are, then your business all of a sudden becomes easier. I like to tell a story. When I was in the car business years ago, we had a guy named Earl that every Saturday, he was a machine. He was a pretty successful guy. But in the auto industry, they take ups. You rotate the customers that come in and you make it fair for everybody, right? So Earl didn't waste a lot of time. Earl would walk up to customers and he would say, hey, how you doing? Welcome to the dealership. Are you guys going to be looking to purchase a vehicle today? And they would say yes or no. If they said no, he said, you sure? There's nothing we're going to be able to show you to move you to be motivated to purchase a new vehicle here today. Let me ask you a question. If I could sell you a new vehicle on promotion today for $1, would you buy it today?
What?
You sell it to me for a dollar. Okay, well, obviously I can't sell it to you for a dollar. So if price appears to be the issue, we could get to a price on a vehicle today, would you buy it today? If all of those were no, he would walk away, celebrate, and go sit down. And one day I asked him, Shakur, what are you doing? Why is it every time you walk up and you with a customer like 2 minutes, you walk away and I always see you like giving yourself a fist. He says, well, my number is 11-1. 11-1. He says, yeah, normally on a Saturday, every takes 11 ups for me to get one sale. So I try and get them in and out as fast as I can. I go through, I ask them those qualifying questions. And if they say, if it's all no, I back off and I go sit down. He said, now, normally what happens is if it changes, you know, he'll watch them on the floor, but he gets his up and he gets out the way. You know, so he can get to the next one. So everything he looked at was, he knew his number. His number was 11-1. So every day, every Saturday, it was our busiest day, Monday, Thursday nights, and Saturday all day. He worked to that number every day. He came in and it was, you know, back then, if you sold 10 to 12, 15 cars a month, you were making, you know, great money. And every month he was, you know, he was one or two in the dealership in sales because he managed the number. Now, he didn't have great relationships with his customers.
I wonder why.
I mean, I don't know what his second buy customers, what that number looked like, but I do know that he had his number because he had his sales numbers every month because he knew his numbers. So that's part of the idea of the strategy behind, you know, getting up and getting an activity in so you can, you know, develop your skill sets to get your number down so that's manageable. And you know your number. That way, all that going back to celebrating your loss. You know, that's another way you celebrate your loss because, you know, for this no, you're moving closer to the next yes.
Yeah, I'm working through that number. I'm working through that list. I'm getting there.
Yes.
And you made a couple of great points there. You get back to that principle of momentum. The more I get the activity rolling, the more I get going, the more I build up. You know, I even noticed that a lot of times if I have multiple interviews in a day or multiple programs in a day, that by the time I get to that second or third, I feel like I'm moving a lot smoother and a lot faster than I was for that first one. So creating right. that momentum, getting moving, very important. Managing the numbers, like you said, very important, working towards your numbers. But I feel like even in that relationship comment at the end, there's also the illustration of managing to our mind's eye. So, and I'm not saying right or wrong in the example by any stretch, but if I'm focused on getting to the magic number 12, if you will, get through right. my 11 to get to the one, then that's what I'm focused on. And I'm going to try to kick that 12 over as many times as I can in one day to get to the sales that I can close today. Now, that might not lead to the second buy. That might not lead to the referrals. That might not lead to the additional family vehicles right. in this context, but I'm successful to the terms that I've defined with trying to get to that magic number 12. So as you work with your team, whether it's new reps, whether it's a rep maybe from another industry or another organization that you're bringing on board, so they've got experience, but not necessarily with you or your industry, how do you help work with them to elevate their mind's eye? You talked about raising the bar earlier to help raise their own expectations to create that repetitive and escalating success.
Man, I wish I could actually answer that question. I think that's I think the best answer I can give to you that is, you know, we're always trying to get reps. I'm always trying to get reps to a real high personal development, right? So whether it's, you know, sometimes we should always be trying to get better at everything and anything that we do, starting at being a great human being, right? And then from there, if you're in leadership, being a great leader in sales, being a great salesperson, getting them to elevate their game. I think the key is getting them to see their own potential.
Yeah.
You know, what they have the potential to be. You know, I like to, you know, I'll see reps, especially newer reps, it's always, you know, I've got reps that have less talent than you making this type of money, right? Or they're here in the stack rankings. You've got the ability to exceed that level. You know, it's just a matter of execution. You know, you got to get it done. You know, and sort of manage them to that level. And then with the veteran reps, you look at them and go, you know, especially in our industry and what my, in our company, one of our biggest challenges when we got here was we had reps that were making great money just selling the one product we sold at the time, which is pretty much toner. And then over the last 5 years, you know, we've become this technology company. And then trying to get them to say, okay, well, to get them out of that comfort zone to go out and make more, right? So the first thing we had to do was go out and find a champion that we could show that we could do it with, and then get that person, you know, where we increase their income because they're selling more solutions outside of the toner box, and then others would follow. So, and I think we've been pretty successful with that with most of our veteran reps. But overall, I mean, I say just you got to get people to see it in themselves. I mean, I had someone tell me a long time ago when my kids were kids and I was coaching in sports, and I heard someone say it, and I think I stole it away from them. And I pretty much raised my kids on the same strategy, which was on the same saying, which was, I can't want it for you more than you want it for yourself. You know, so if that's the case, you know, and that was our whole thing, you know, going to practice and putting in the extra work and the personal development and reading and studying, you know, it was, you know, I can't want it for you more than you want it for yourself. So you got to determine how much you want it. I see the potential. It's there. But again, it goes back down to the Michael Jordan effect. Everybody says they want it, man. You're not going to find, look, I know guys, I've had, if not a thousand guys that I've talked to that work with me or under me as far as in sales, whatever, that said, told me how much they want for their families, how much they want to do this, how much they want to do that. I'll never forget when I was, years ago, I had a guy that every paycheck I turned around made me feel like I felt terrible. He looked back and he'd be scratching his head every paycheck. He scratching his head and looked depressed. And he had he had triplets. And I just look at him and say, hey, man, what's going on? I just try to figure out how to get these bills paid, man. You know, I can't see, I'm not making any money, blah, blah, blah. And I'll go, yeah, but you're not doing the work either. How bad do you want to pay the bills? How bad do you want this life that you keep talking about for your family? But you're not willing to do the work. You can't say that. You can't do them both. You know, if you want it, you have to do it. You can't want it and not do it. It's sort of an oxymoron. It just doesn't work that way. And it's challenging. I mean, it's, you know, for me personally, never been something I've understood. It's one of these things that I've had to learn to, I've had to adapt so I can empathize. You know, because you can't, as a leader, you got to first empathize with your employee or your salesperson, whatever, and then work from there. I feel your pain. I understand it. Okay, now what are we going to do about it? Right? And then work from that point forward. But that's the one thing in my mind. One of my first meetings I was at when I came here, I was telling a story about, I think I use my kids as a lot of analogies and a lot of analogies that I think that, you know, with the path that they've taken. And I don't think managing sales teams is much different than managing a household. You know, it's still the same. You got to motivate them. You know, you got to put plans in front of them. It's all the same type of stuff. But we were talking about how, you know, I made a statement that, hey, Everybody wants to be number one. Everybody wants to be the best. You know, no one wakes up in the morning and says, oh man, I can't wait to get up this morning and be second, you know, or third. No one does that. And I said, and really, who wants to be around somebody who's not working to be first? And I had a guy raise his hand and said, yeah, I don't believe in it. And I go, what do you not believe in? He says, I have a son. I don't tell my son that, I've never told him that he has to trying to be first. I said, I didn't say he had to be first. I said he has to get up every morning wanting to be first, driving to be number one, driving to be the best. He said, yeah, I've never told my kid that. I don't believe in that. I think you just get up and, yeah, I think that, you know, you just, you are who you are and you'll be who you're going to be. I said, there's no goals. There's nothing to drive towards. He said, yeah, but you don't need that to live. Okay. Needless to say, in my mind, I'm going, okay, this is going to be a short relationship right here. Because, you know, I can't do that. One of my, a manager I had years ago, who used to think I didn't like him, I had to reach out to him after I left the company and thank him for giving me one of the best learning moments I've ever had in my career. When he first became our manager, our regional vice president, he brought all the leaders. I was the director of sales and in our area, and he brought us all in this room, and he asked us, what are you willing to do to be number one? And it was interesting because the answer he was looking for was anything, right? My answer was, well, anything as long as it doesn't conflict with my faith and my family, I'll do whatever it takes. But that's what he was looking for. And it's ironic because afterwards, I think it was like 9 leaders that he asked that question to. And afterwards, when it was done, you could see the difference in how he treated the people who said anything and the people who said anything other than that. And I asked him, why did you do that? And he says, I always want to be surrounded by people that think the way I think, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to be number one. So I don't want anybody around me that doesn't feel the same way. Makes sense.
You get back to goals and mind's eye and who you're trying to build. And we could look at it from different angles, but especially as we're talking about sales, there's a competitive nature. Mm-hmm. And not everybody has to be the Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant true through brick walls to get there, but there has to be some sort of competitive drive, wherever it comes from, however we internalize it, in order to be successful in that. And I feel like that ties back into the potential that you were talking about. And recently, you talk about kids. I was actually talking to my son, and this will get to another story. My son's young, and I was talking about potential. And he looked at me and he said, well, Dad, what's potential? And it's funny how when you try to explain things to a young kid, you start reevaluating how you understand them and how to communicate them, right?
Right.
So right or wrong, I came down to it's what other people see we're capable of when we don't see it ourselves, which maybe that's 100% true. Maybe it's not. But especially with sales reps, trying to help communicate that potential and find the incremental wins along the way. So you're getting back to my son in sports and competition. And by the way, I should mention that while you're talking about your kids, they were, I believe, all college athletes. So we're talking about the success and the values and the hard work and all the things, running successful teams versus a successful family. There's lots of different ways to be successful. But specifically, as you were coaching them in sports, they all went on to play at the collegiate level. My son just self-selected. He wanted to start wrestling. Cool by me. I'm not going to say no to that. And he's got some natural athletic tendencies. He's got a lot to learn, a lot to grow. So who knows what his future may or may not be in any given sport. But the other day at wrestling, he just happened to be placed with another young partner relative to his size that at this level just doesn't appear to have the same sense of his body that my son has. So my son was doing very well against him. And that doesn't mean that my son is good. He's been to a couple of classes, but just paired with like this one partner. But I could see what was happening because a couple of the coaches started paying attention to several of the new kids, including my son. And they wanted to gauge where my son really was. So I watched as they paired him against one of the very best kids in his age and size group, who I only knew was one of the very best because I was listening to the other parents talk about him. And the other kid pinned my son. But it took him substantially longer to pin my son than it took him to pin the several other kids that he went with. So my son gets in the truck after he's hanging his head, he's down on himself. Well, that kid pinned me. I'm never going to be as good as that kid. You know, Michael Jordan, type syndrome that you're talking about. And we start breaking it down. Well, how much longer has he been doing it? How much more has he practiced? How much more technique does he know? By the way, how long did it take him to pin you?
Right. And
you snatched a single. How long were you holding on to that one leg that he had to break out of it? And you turned the corner and you did these things. So now we start breaking it down that it's not the loss. But when now when you start, and this is where the potential conversation came from. Now when you start looking at potential, look at all of these other things that create the opportunities for success.
Right. Right.
Some were done because you were taught, and some were done because it was just intuitive. Right. So now those are the building blocks to sustained success. Right. And whether it's a young kid wrestling or whether it is building representatives, whether they're new reps or elevating reps that are struggling, I feel like with the potential piece that you mentioned, helping them see things in themselves that they don't see, and then finding the components of losses to help lead to the wins, really helps work to that.
It goes like, go to the be like Mike thing. The be like Mike analogy isn't about you're going to be the next Michael Jordan. It's about putting the work in to be the best that you can be. No one's ever going to be another Michael Jordan, but there's going to be a lot of people in between that, you know, that's at their personal best. That's why track and field is such a beautiful sport, man. My kids are already in track, and we never coach them about winning. It's all about PR.
Yeah.
Every track meet, break your personal record from the previous meet. Be better than your previous meet. So the only time you had a bad meet was if you ran and your number, your finishing time was less than what your previous best was. The whole idea was to get better. And that's what's great about, you'll see track athletes doing the Olympics, watching the summer in Paris. You'll see some that are coming second, third, whatever, and they'll say, hey, it's my personal best. I broke my personal record, you know, because it's about getting better. Same in sales. Every time, or in sales, leadership, management, whatever you want to call it, every time you read a book, you're going to get a little bit better. You don't have to read a book and get, you know, learn 25 things out of it. You just need one. You know, and then if you read, you know, 12 books a year, one book a month for a year, you found 12 different, and one thing out of each book, you've done 12 things to make you better for the next year. Right? So it's about incrementally getting better. It's about, you know, being better than what you were yesterday, learning from your mistake. All those things come into play into being, you know, a good salesperson. But what I don't want to do is negate the fact that to be a great salesperson, in most cases, in my world, it's be a great human being first. That will lead to success in sales because, you know, people buy an order, right? They buy you, sell yourself first, company, services, product, dollar amount. And if you sell the first two, the last one is a moot point. You sell yourself, sell your company, sell your services, sell your product, then ask for price, right? If you don't sell the first one, you can give it away and they won't buy it from you, right? So people buy from people. So the better you get, the more, and you know, so it's interesting. That vibe that people always talk about, that first impression, right? I always tell people, tell reps, you've got a 15 to 30 second first impression. Okay. People start making the decision as you approach them. They're looking at your walk, your swagger or lack thereof, right? How you dress, you know, the open your mouth, how you shake hands. I'm a big guy on handshakes, you know, so, you know, I make a big decision off of a grip. You know, my kids have been learning how to shake hands when they're 3-4 years old. They've been giving good grips. You know, people look at me and go, man, you know, son's got a great handshake. My daughter even, great handshake. But it's people make those impressions, you know, that first impression is made rather quickly. You know, so it all comes down to people buying from people. So we should all be working to get better and every day, you know, whether you're reading a book, listening to a podcast, you know, I've always got like 2 or 3 books at a time. And People come to my home office and I look up and like, okay, he always looks at me. We got them all, every single one of them. Now, do I remember every single one of them? That's a whole different story. I'm getting older, so I don't remember every single one, but I'll still go back and I'll reference things. I probably read Stephen Covey's Seven Habits, 20 times, you know, because it's, there's so much, there was so much meat on that bone for me that, you know, that helped change my life, you know, that, and I recommend it to everybody. Every time I hire a new rep, first thing I do is, have you read Seven Habits? Okay, get the book. And in most cases, I'll buy the book and send it to them. Because I think that's the book everybody on the planet should read.
For one of my like genie in the bottle wishes is to be able to remember and immediately call on everything I've learned from every book I've read. You don't know how many times I'm sitting in my office looking up on my bookshelf going, damn, if I could just remember and take action on every word I highlighted in all of those books up there. It just, it comes and goes and pieces stay and pieces go away. You just hit on the one question that I've been holding off that I wanted to ask before we got out of here today. You have mentioned how important it is to be a great human being multiple times. And I know in our previous conversations, it's a common theme that you talk about. So I would like to ask you this. What does it take? What does it require to be a great human being?
Wow. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't say strong faith, strong sense of family. I think one of the most important things that's really important to me, and I think it's important to everybody, be known for doing what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. I think that's a lost art of people not doing what they say when they say. Even starting with your kids, you know, you tell your kids, hey, if you finish your eating, I'm going to give you this. Or you do that, you know, win this race or get a good grade, I'm going to give you this. And then you don't. It starts there and then it works its way out. Be known as a person who does what they say, when they say, how they say. Strong values, you know, listen, I'm a man of faith, so that's important. I think those are my major cores. I don't think that, you know, I think every human being should be working to be a better human being every day. You know, serving, you know, willing to do for others. Everybody serves in different ways. Serving doesn't mean that you have to go every day and, you know, sit on the, get involved in a food line, right? Serving could be something that, you know, trying to help everybody, you know, people that you know, and, you know, how do you help them, whether it be advice, selfless advice. Everybody's got advice. It's got to be selfless. It's got to be, you got no skin in the game. You know, you're going to just give them advice based on what's the right thing to do. I mean, you know, honest, respectful, you know, respect others. Trying to minimize your biasness. We all have it, but you got to be able to minimize it to give everybody a fair chance. It's so funny, right? We can do so much. We do such great things, you know, when we're talking to other people. Now, I tell guys all the time, you know, I can tell you a million things, but the best coach you have that you should listen to, the best coach you have is yourself. If you have kids, just do it like this. If your child were to come up and ask you for some advice about something, ask you whatever you're going through, if your son asked you, your daughter, ask you that question to you, what would you tell them? Because whatever you would tell them, there's a strong possibility that's exactly what you should be doing. Right? And that's what I try to look at things that, you know, I don't pretend to know it all. I don't even pretend to know a little bit. But I do know that I try to ask myself, when I get in a situation, to be as unbiased as I can. I give everybody the benefit of the doubt. I think that's probably about the best answer that I can give you.
That was a great answer. I'm not going to add anything to it. It's your answer. I know you talk about it a lot and it means a lot to you. I think that was a wonderful answer and there's plenty to go by. I personally, especially with the young son, I love the comment of however you would tell your kid to do it is probably the right way to do it. How many of us are going to go out and teach our kids to lie, steal, cheat, take advantage? You know, we'll just do this. And how we're going to try to teach our kids to do things the right way is most likely how we should be doing it.
Man, listen, we know the answer to right and wrong. We know the answer. So the problem is that sometimes we, as adults, we don't want that to be the answer because we know it's not going to give us the results we want, right? Because we know, but if our kid was asking us that question, and he would say, well, you know, for instance, when my kid has asked me a question, I've always said, what do you think you should do? What do you think the right answer is, right? And so you can learn how they're thinking. In management, I still do that to this day with my managers. I do it with reps asking, what do you think first? But first I want to gauge where the thought process is, and then coach them to the answer, because here's what we do know. No different than a teenager, a teenage son, a teenage daughter who think they know everything, right? As adults, the adults are much, much different. They want, if they come to the decision on their own, they're more apt to act on it than what someone tells them to do. So selling them on their own decision sometimes can be a challenge, but you know, they don't have kids. What would you tell your brother? If your brother came and asked you, your sibling came and asked you, what would you tell them? What would be your coach up? And normally, if that's your coach up, then why wouldn't you do the same thing?
That's a great point. And I want to go out on a great point. So we're going to wrap it up right there. I don't want to risk something that's not as solid as we continue the conversation. Al, you've been awesome. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to work with you over the years. It's been a pleasure to learn from you over the years. I appreciate all that you've shown me in the partnership that we've had. And I know you took time today away from your grandkids for this conversation. So I am very, very appreciative of that. And I want to turn you back to being a jungle gym or a wrestling dummy or whatever you're doing with your grandkids today while you play with them. So thank you so very, very much for being
here. All right, Michael. I appreciate the opportunity, man. First podcast I've ever done. Really appreciate it. You've made it very easy to talk to you as usual.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Hopefully it's the first of many. Hopefully we get the ball rolling. And if it's something that you enjoy doing, we can help get some more lined up for you. You're doing awesome work. I see how you're developing people out there to be human beings, not just salespeople. And I really appreciate it. So thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you again soon.
All right, man. Appreciate you. Thanks.
Thank you. Al, thank you so much for a great conversation. I appreciate all that you shared, both professionally and personally, and how you made it crystal clear to all of us how your core principles truly guide all of your communications and how you approach leading not just your team and your business, but your family as well. Thank you so very much. And throughout that conversation, I really appreciated how you focused on talking about leading by example and the importance of getting out of the tower and really coaching people throughout the whole process. And I loved how you broke down opposite actions create opposite results. Now, that can be good and bad, but I really do appreciate how you pointed that out and you gave us so much to think about. Thank you very, very much. And of course, thank you all for taking the time to listen to another conversation. I hope you got as much out of that conversation as I did. Thank you for being here. Before we run out, let's thank our sponsors one more time, HumanTel. For everybody that has wondered, what do I need to do to understand what people are likely thinking and feeling at any moment in time by identifying shifts in their emotions? Head over to HumanTel.com. Choose the online self-paced training program that's best for you and enter the code INQUASIVE25 for 25% off their best-in-class online training. As I keep saying, I've done it myself. I highly vouch for it over at humantel.com. For the professional interviewers, please head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. Check out the International Association of Interviewers, and that's where you can learn about all of their upcoming in-person and online events. So where you can find their interviewer training resources, their legal updates, their community, everything you need over there, and especially that's where you can learn more about the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation, if you or anyone on your team qualifies, the process it takes to earn the designation, and then what that can mean for your career moving forward. All of that and more at certifiedinterviewer.com. And finally, we appreciate everybody checking out Inquasive.com. That's where you can learn more about the programs that our clients ask us to facilitate for their leadership teams, negotiation teams, HR teams, and beyond, as we work to teach them how to encourage people to share sensitive information under vulnerable circumstances in the face of consequences. All of our strategic listening and persuasive communication training there to be found at Inquasive.com. Thank you all so much for listening to another conversation. Please, before you go, like the show, share the show, subscribe to the show, share your feedback. What would you like to hear more or less of? Who would you like to see on the show? Thank you so much for continuing to come back every week. We truly appreciate it. Please stay safe, take care of each other, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.